Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Morena, Jennifer, how are you?
Morena, I'm good, thank you.
That's good to hear. It's nice to have you back on the show. We've got some big topics to talk about today. Let's start with the massive health announcements that happened yesterday, brought out by the government, looking at centralising our DHB system, basically getting rid of the established DHB system, and also bringing in an independent Māori health authority. Now, what are some of the most significant parts of this? Because it's a huge announcement. What do you think are some of those first crucial things we should be thinking about?
Well, I think the first thing is that it is a significant overhaul from the way in which the health system was overhauled, like in the 80s and the 90s. And I think the other thing to note is that the Simpson Review, it's done more in two ways that the Simpson Review had recommended, which is scrapping the DHBs, which was not something the Simpson Review had gone as far as, but also that review had wanted something in the area of Māori health, but had not gone as far as establishing the new Māori Health Authority, which really has, how Andrew Little has talked about it, is that this is in the spirit and practice of Tēnā Rangatiratanga and Te Tiriti and getting the partnership with Māori in the delivery, but also the commissioning of services. And like who gets to deliver and how much money is shared with Māori communities and health providers. This is a really, it seems to me, and I'm not a health expert, that it's doing two things. It's centralising the policy strategy, regulatory and financial stability elements into one, Ministry of Health. Then doing this sort of semi-centralised four regional districts to come under Health New Zealand to oversee hospitals and primary health care and so on. But then it devolves. So while it's centralised, it's also enabling a more local, responsive, joined-up delivery of health services to those scattered around New Zealand, often in quite isolated communities. So I think most of the response has been positive. There are still critical voices out there, which is good because it's going to challenge the government to make sure that they get this right. We don't know how much money is coming at this year. Mm-hmm. That's going to be announced in the May budget. But they really will have to fund this adequately to make it work. And they're going to have to be on to the implementation process really quickly so that it's smooth, because we're talking about people's lives here, they can't mess this up.
One of the criticisms I've seen that's been thrown out at the moment is a concern from people who are saying, how do you have any sort of democratic input into this? And I think that's talking to the fact that with DHBs, they're elected, ostensibly some of those board members, through local council elections. Obviously, there's a whole massive conversation to have there about how maybe poor the turnout for those particular parts of voting is, how there's little information around that. But do you think that's something we need to be concerned about? Or do you think that that's not something that's going to be an issue when the system is changing?
So, yeah, I've thought about this, and I don't think it will be an issue. The turnout is poor. These lists of people who stand are quite often still without being explicit, line up with particular political parties.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone understands the voting system that's used for the DHBs. It's not really clear that those who are elected are accountable during their term.
Mm.
It's, we sort of do this. And I think that's the thing about thinking that accountability is only through a voting system once every 3 years. As a Crown entity, there will be this Health New Zealand will be slightly removed from a sort of ministry,
mm-hmm.
and they will have to make sure that there are opportunities for feedback and consultation in the process of delivering the healthcare.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Samoa and what's happening over there at the moment, because it's a very tense election right now. And there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that we're not even seeing much of this in the mainstream media here in New Zealand, given that we have such a close relationship with Samoa. Could you give us a little bit of an overview of what's actually happening and where we're at with this current sort of, stalemate at the moment?
Yeah, this is moving like both slow and kind of fast. So we're all kind of on tenterhooks, really. So, you know, the election was a couple of weeks ago. It was really close. It took quite a long time to finish the count. And when the count was finalised, it was 25 for the opposition party, the FAST party, and 25 seats for the incumbent and an independent. And so then there were negotiations. Not unlike what we see with the MMP here, right? And then the constitutional arrangements there are such that if they don't reach 10% women elected to the parliament, they have like an overhang seat, so they add an additional seat,
right?
And then they give that seat to the electorate MP who was, you know, woman who was next closest to winning. And in this case, it's gone to a woman MP who's from the incumbent government, or, you know, former government party. So that now means that it's and the independent then went with the opposition party, so it's locked up at 26 seats each. Yeah, normally you'd have 45 days for a political party to form a government, but what seems to have happened overnight is that the opposition party is now challenging several candidates based on some controversial issues. So there's going to be some court hearings and some injunctions that are happening. So I have no idea when this is going to end, but if The Wire or anybody else is interested in covering this, then get in touch with Damon Salesa, because he's like one of the experts. But you're right, you know, like the media isn't covering this. Even this morning, I think, when I went looking on RNZ, you know, something was covered at like 6:30 this morning. Who's up at 6:30 in the morning apart from me, right?
Yeah.
You know, we want to hear about this. Auckland needs to hear about this.
Yeah.
You know, we're a Pacific city, so yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, totally. Well, let's talk a little bit about America before we let you go, because, of course, the George Floyd case has been just resolved, I guess, in the legal sense. Derek Chauvin has been convicted on all charges. Now, this is you know, part of a bigger conversation, I guess, in the sense that people are saying, you know, is this justice? Is this accountability? Or is this just one part of a bigger picture about the issue that we're seeing with racialized policing and police violence in the States at the moment? What are your takeaways from the announcements this week?
Well, I mean, the verdict is a good thing, right? It needed to happen. And we can see that from his immediate family, that they feel very strongly that this is an important outcome, not just, you know, honouring Floyd and commemorating his life, but also in terms of sort of stimulating broader reforms. So and that's really what Biden and Kamala Harris came out and said yesterday as well, that this is really only just a drop in the ocean of reforming systemic racism in the police and criminal justice system. So we know that there's a bill on the floor of the House that's been passed and has to go to Senate, which is the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And there's some really important initiatives in that. They'll need 10 Republicans to cross the floor in the Senate to get it passed. But there are Republicans interested in working on compromise clauses, whether it would be the same bill. But this is, even though it's a federal bill, what it can do is withhold funding for policing and criminal justice in states that don't outlaw chokeholds and cartoid holds, these sorts of lethal ways of doing policing. So if states don't outlaw those, for example, and don't put in place, you know, new training measures and all of those sorts of things, then they won't get federal funding for their policing, which is one small step towards, you know, really having to unravel what is such a racist system.
Absolutely. Well, Professor Jennifer Curtin, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much for chatting with us this morning. Some big stuff going on at home and overseas right now, so we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Kia ora.
Cool. Kia ora.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Professor